Greetings, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. It's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and you are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. You know, like that line from the Beatles? I read the news today. Oh, boy. Among other things, I read that the people who were released from their sentences from their involvement in the January 6, 2021 uprising at the Capitol are planning a march on the Capitol this week on January 6th. So my choice for today's opener is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio released by Ken Lane, January 8th, 2021. Here is the local angle.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, the eternal desert. Eternal to us, anyway. Wet years and dry years, cold years and fire years, but it was desert when we were born. And it shall be desert when we are buried next to the septic tank. Go back about 8,000 years and the American desert still had a lot more water and a lot more green stuff in general. Wetlands, year-round rivers, denser vegetation, more oaks in the valleys, more pines in the foothills and mountains. The place I call home today has been the domain of a dozen cultures and political systems over the past 500 years. Early peoples defeated earlier peoples, nations moved according to strength and resources, and eventually the hottest and driest parts of the desert southwest became home to the smaller tribes pushed out of greener pastures. Shoshone and Paiute people took root in the arid Great Basin, for instance. Civilizations like the Hohokam that grew up around the Salt and Gila rivers broke down and dispersed once the climate changed and the water dried up. The Pueblos of today's New Mexico were the city-state centers of power for some 500 years before the Spaniards showed up on horseback in 1598. The Russians and the French and the English and the people from the weird, violent new nation of America all claim their own chunks of the West. Skirmishes and wars were fought whenever beneficial to the business at hand, which is business, generally. Spain became Mexico. Mexico gave way to the California ranchos to the west. And finally, the gold rush gave the United States a reason to take it all. Everything from Texas to the Pacific Ocean. So it goes. Many years ago, when I was working as a foreign correspondent in the town of Bratislava, there was a feature story that all the reporters loved to do. It was about this one old man. He was about 98 years old. I don't remember the details, but his claim to fame is that he'd been born and raised and lived his whole life in this one little village in Central Europe on the Danube, and a half dozen nation states and kingdoms had ruled this land during his lifetime. So he had been a subject of the Habsburg Empire, Austria-Hungary, a citizen of a Nazi puppet state, a worker in the Soviet Union's Warsaw Pact nations, a citizen of Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and finally Slovakia, which became its own nation again after what they call a bloodless revolution. I was there on that long ago New Year's Eve in Bratislava, the last night of 1992, waiting to see if the crowds would manage to start a war. Despite both sides, the Czechs and the Slovaks, signing off on the political divorce and the split up of the household possessions. Now, somebody smacked my old friend Matt Welch in the forehead, or the scalp, I guess, and a trickle of blood had dramatically appeared on his enormous forehead, and boy, he just would not shut up about it. You'd think he'd storm the beach at Normandy alone rather than getting a scratch during a night of boozing in the public square. Somebody gave me a Malcolm X hat for some reason, and also a giant flag of the new Slovak nation, which would be a right-wing populist mobster state pretty much forever. I guess I talked some of these skinheads into giving me the flag. And so I wound up in this tower, its real purpose unknown to me, with the fireworks and the rockets bursting in air. And I was waving that giant flag around because what else do you do with such a thing? And I looked down and all these news photographers from the world's premier news agencies were gathered beneath me to photograph this pointless yet photogenic scene. Countries come and go, but the people in the places remain. Now, they might announce on cable news tomorrow that this part of the desert is now the glorious Republic of Naboo, and the next desert over is the invincible kingdom of the Skirms and what have you, whatever. And I'll still get up late the next day, and I'll walk the dog at sundown, and I'll make my car payment for as long as I have to. The bills do not stop. The financial system exists above and beyond the political maneuvers of mere mortals in our time. You always gotta pay the man. And even when they take out one man, there's always another one who will come calling for the money. But it will still be the desert. I have no allegiance to any land but the land I call home and all the neighboring lands I consider to be part of the package. The Great Basin, the Sonoran, the Chihuahuan, the Mojave, the whole American Southwest. Because what are you gonna do? Leave? We've got Brendan Mays on the line. Brendan, I want to ask you about this week here in the high desert.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for calling. Everything's going great. Really looking forward to 2021 and getting it done. That's going to be my new motto. 2021, let's get her done.
I'm looking at the radio station website here. And it looks
like... Nice website you guys got, by the way. Really enjoy all those local ads.
Here is this story about a rally that was held, apparently in response to what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday.
Ken, you're talking about a protest? Or are you talking about a rally? Or are you, what are you talking about here?
The protest that was apparently held in Yucca Valley, right by the Senior Center, in support, according to the article, of the events at the U.S. Capitol. And I just wanted to see what you knew about it.
Ken, it seems like it's just a natural response or outgrowth of people a lot of people are really upset right now. You know, a lot of people don't have faith in our electoral system. Shenanigans seem to be going around in various states about the vote count, manipulation, and, you know, suitcases packed with ballots, and people are upset about this, and I think rightly so. I mean, I'm not going to pick sides on this thing. I'm not saying that these people are necessarily right or wrong, but it does seem like a bunch of skullduggery was at hand, and these people are doing what Americans do best, which is to let the government know loud and clear what they feel or feel like they're not being listened to. And so people go out in street corners, they wave placards around, they dress up goofy, they honk horns, make a big show, and then everybody feels a lot better afterward. It's like some sort of release of pressure. And I think that's basically what you're looking at. People are frustrated, they're letting off a little bit of steam. And that's totally healthy. And a democracy, you wouldn't expect anything less. You'd want to see these things happen.
Well, Brendan, you're speaking of this event as if you weren't there. I'm looking at the photograph, and there's only about 12 people there, and you're one of them.
What photograph are you talking about, Ken?
The picture of the rally on Wednesday afternoon in Yucca Valley.
Let me get to the website. Hold on a second. Let me get to the website. Okay. Let's see. Okay.
So there's the picture. Oh. There's the sign for the town of Yucca Valley.
Of course I was there. Ken, of course I was there. I was just there to take the temperature of the citizenry of Yucca Valley, of the valley. And I just wanted to see what was going on, get the feel of things, see how things are progressing. And, you know, maybe I got snapped in a picture with some people. But I was just there to see what was going on, just like anybody else, Ken.
You've got one of these stop the steal flags that you're waving.
Stop the steal. I'm holding a flag. I don't remember holding any flag, Ken.
What are you wearing? Like this fur? You got a fur hat?
Stop the steal, Ken. I'm holding a flag. You know, when you're standing there, you're talking around with a bunch of people, and they're pushing things on you, and they're handing you leaflets, and they're handing you flags, or they're handing you, you know, a tight-fitting leather jacket you're supposed to wear to make them happy, or whatever you do whatever you got to do to fit in, and, you know, be amenable to people. You know, when somebody's talking to you, why you repeat the things that they say, you mimic their emotions. Yeah, you talk and act like they do. If they got a southern accent, well then, Ken, maybe you turn it on just a touch. You know what I'm saying? But it's just something you do when you're there with a group of people. You just kind of try to blend in. I guess that's what happened. Someone handed me a flag. I don't know what the flag said on it. If it had a picture of that snake all cut up or the one with the boot standing on it, I'm not sure exactly what they handed me. But, you know, in an opportune moment, somebody came by and snapped a photo. That's all I can say.
So you don't have any political position here, is what you're saying?
My political position, Ken, is always economic. That's what it comes down to. It's about the economy, stupid. So what we got, not that you're stupid or anybody's stupid, but it's about the economy. So politics is the economy. Economy is politics. The business of America is business. That's the way I see it. So I'm going to pick whatever side I happen to be on at that particular moment. And I think that's healthy for democracy, Ken. I'm a compromiser. I'm right down the middle. If one side's way off to the right, the other side's way off to the left, I want to be hated by both sides and loved by both sides equally.
So
I understand.
As you're trying to run the middle. But what I don't understand is what's with
hard balancing on these fences, Ken, you know?
What's with the fur hat and the horns and you got your shirt off? I mean, I don't.
Ken, the hat was that horned hat that you're speaking of is a left. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, all right? And it's a long Norse tradition to wear your Skligador helmet into any sort of perceived festivities or battle. situation. And I guess the Packers had quite a decisive win over that other team. I have friends from the area, Ken, some family living there. We're not descended from the Vikings per se, but Ken, everybody knows if you're going to fight COVID, you got to have a strong immune system. That is the basis for good health and getting through this thing, is taking care of your own health. What's the fundamental building block of human beings' immune systems? Well, it's vitamin D. Vitamin D is the thing that's going to save us. Vitamin D, and to a lesser extent, vitamin C and zinc and other supplements and various colonic regimens are going to save us. But the most important one is getting sunlight on the skin. And I was just, it was a beautiful day. The sun was out. My vitamin D count has always been low. It's a genetic deficiency I have. I don't know why I have it. But I was just trying to absorb as much sunlight as absolutely possible. And it was a gorgeous day, Ken. 72 degrees, full sunlight. I'm out there. And hey, this is America. I mean, gosh, Ken, you remember the 70s. We grew up then. Everybody was going shirtless. Guys would walk shirtless around town all the time. You could go down to the beach today, and there's people frolicking out in the water, and they're wearing like long pants and a long sleeve t-shirt in the water. What are you doing? It's unhealthy, and more importantly, Ken, it's a little un-American, don't you think? I mean, part of being an American male is the ability to take your shirt off, or the ability to urinate in any public place, you know, with discretion, because you can. You're a guy. So you do these things. If we don't do these things, Ken, they're going to take the right away from us.
So is it a fear of some sort of personal rights being taken away that has drawn you to, say, a public protest like this?
We all know about the mob mentality, Ken. We all know what can happen when a group of people get together and things get just a little bit out of hand. There's some sort of a force, some sort of a higher power that takes over the whole group, and people end up doing things that maybe they're a little bit embarrassed about later, or they wish they wouldn't have done. But the whole group was going for it. They were all moving en masse as like a unified force or something. And it's exhilarating, and it can kind of take you by surprise and take you over and lead you to do things that you wouldn't necessarily do, like, let's say, at a Rotary meeting. I wouldn't get up in front of the Rotary Club shirtless with a horned Skoglar hat on and make some sort of crazy pronouncements about a president or politics or whatever. But they tar and feather me and send me out of town.
A number of the protesters climbed onto some of the tourist cars that I guess were leaving the national park. And
What incident are you talking about, Ken? You're talking about an incident where, oh, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about that caravan of rock climbers that came at us and drove into our group and screaming and honking and calling us traitors and all sorts of names, calling us racists and all this other garbage. They were the aggressors. They drove into us. They are the ones who pulled off the highway and into our parking lot at the senior center and started harassing us. Now, if people wanted to stand up for their rights and stand up their beliefs and shout right back at those people, then that's what happens, Ken. That's democracy in action right there on the streets.
Now, there was one vehicle that was reported in the altercation, and this was a young family with two kids and car seats in the back, and it says in a Subaru Outback.
It was a Forester.
And did your group...
Well, first of all, this group of senior citizens who were protesting what they believed to be an illegal action by the state electoral boards, as I'm not affiliated with these people. I was just driving by. I was going down to the mailbox place to check my mail, doing all my typical rounds, stop by the alkali water store, get my supply of alkali water, doing all the things I normally do. Check in on my various business enterprises down the nail salons that I have set up. And I drove by the senior center and I saw a couple of people that I knew, some former business associates who are now retired. And I thought I'd go by and just see what was up. And I just came by and I was talking to them And, well, you know, one thing leads to another, and people get agitated. And as you know, old people can get real frustrated, and they're in pain a lot of times, Ken. That's the kind of thing you got to remember. These people are, they're hurting. They're in actual physical pain all the time. That makes you a little ornery, you know what I mean? And so maybe they were angry about a lot of things. And this whole mood of anger and more importantly, the idea that somehow their vote was stolen from them or they were cheated somehow, it really gets people upset. So, you know, maybe people got a little excited. But, you know, at least they were outside, Ken. They got outside. They were getting sunlight. They were hanging out together. They were with their friends. I think that's a really nice thing in this time of COVID where we're locking old people up indoors. We're letting them out. And they're getting out there and they're engaging with the public. Everybody was wearing masks. It was safe, Ken. So,
do you think that the pandemic and especially the lockdowns is what's causing this civil unrest around the country and right here at home?
Ken, when you get right down to it, this is the kind of reaction you'd expect. And I'm surprised more people are surprised that people are acting out. When you sever the ties that bind us, when you cut people off from each other and lock them up in their houses, don't let them go out, don't let them have their businesses open, cut off their supply of income, cut them off from their friends, cut them off from their family, don't let anybody gather. We're social creatures, Ken. And if you cut off the main component of being a human being, which is social interaction, what you're gonna get is social disruption. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing social disruption brought about by our so-called elites or betters, our rulers, as they tend to think of themselves, telling us how to live our lives. And that's, frankly, it's a little fascist and very un-American. You know, Ken, we fought a huge war against the fascists in Germany and Italy. And for these very reasons, people trying to tell you what to do and how to live your life and what to think. And frankly, a lot of good red-blooded Americans are sick to death of it. They're seeing suicide rates go up, drug abuse go up, overdoses go up, all these horrible things happening, kids flunking out of school, falling way behind. And quite frankly, they've had enough. And I think these protests are a valid expression of the American will to live. That's how I see it, Ken. This is the will to live their lives.
Would you go so far as to say that for, say, the mass protest of last summer?
Well, that's the other side of it, Ken. A lot of this is political showboating. And the politicians of both sides are taking advantage of people's real pain, real concern, real deprivation, and trying to score political points with it. And I just think that's reprehensible.
So when your group circled the tourist family in the Subaru, was that what was foremost on your mind?
It's not my group, Ken. Like I said, I came across these people. I just want to make that clear. That
of course,
I'm
of
a
course.
Man of a moment, Ken. You
the
know?
The
so,
group that you were photographed with. I'm not,
okay, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Was the idea in your mind that they somehow represented the elites, I believe you said?
Ken, I think it was just a simple physical reaction to having a car, which is basically a weapon, being thrust at your elderly personage at a high rate of speed, and people getting reacting to that, to being physically threatened, Ken. I mean, sure, you say it's a family with two kids strapped into the back, but you should have seen the look on this guy's face. I mean, all sweaty, and his eyes were like twin steel daggers shooting out over the very low hood of the Subaru with its flat four, opposed four motor. Great sight lines, great car, but you could really reveal the anger and the hatred on this man's face. And I seriously think he was coming in there to hurt somebody.
According to the CHP report, the entire incident took place at the red light. So they were on the highway westbound, and you all were on the curb, but apparently encircled the car and began beating on it.
Guys, yeah, in the heat of the moment, you're not really sure where you are or what's going on or what's happening. You just know that you have to prove your point no matter what, Ken. And so whether or not we were on the curb, we were up on the sidewalk, we were in the right of way, we were standing on the zebra zone where you're not supposed to drive, I'm not exactly sure the exact placement of the people. To me, it seems all this stuff took place in the parking lot. Pretty sure this happened in the parking lot out front. And he drove up and came around the little island that's, the island that separates the traffic from going in and out. And then he whipped around left really hard right past the bank and came right at us. And I was pretty sure this occurred. Now, there might have been another incident out in the street, perhaps, right on the other side of that little strip that's got the crushed up rock in it and the cactus in it, on the other side out in the street, but I'm pretty sure this occurred in the parking lot.
Now, you had fled before law enforcement arrived, if I'm following you here.
Well, fled, Ken, what are you talking about? Fled, like I said, I had things to do that day. I had to go to the nail salons and collect my rent. And I had to, there were a lot of things I had. I had to go to the alkaline water store to get my anti-cancer water. I had a lot of things I had to do that day, and I just went about my business. It seemed like the little party that they had in the corner was breaking up, and I just went on my way. About this fled the scene. I mean, heck, they got a photo of me. Nobody's called me. Nobody's contacted me about anything. You're the only one who's contacted me about this. I don't know what the problem is.
So, Brendan, perhaps to your point about so many of these outdoor protests being a way for people to get out of the house under lockdown and get fresh air and see members of their community and etc. Shortly after this event in Yucca, there was a counter-protest in Joshua Tree.
Sure, I know those people. There's good folks on both sides.
You're in those pictures, too.
Like I said, Ken, there's good people on both sides. We've got to work together. There's got to be some sort of compromise that we can all reach. And that's what's missing in our lives, Ken. The ability to see somebody that we think we're diametrically opposed to, look at them, see all the ways that we're similar, and move forward from there, Ken. We got to be talking to each other. We got to be respectful of each other's viewpoints. We got to listen. We got to talk, and we got to come to some sort of compromise. It's the only way we're going to get things done. So I kind of see myself as an ambassador for the business interests of the Valley. I'm always trying to get people an economic advantage in their lives, trying to better their lives, trying to increase their income, trying to increase their place in society, trying to make everything a better place. That's what I do, Ken. You know that. I'd be in front of the saloon, and I'd be talking to all of my friends over there, too, and then finding out what they think. And hopefully, I can find a point right in the middle between both sides and just stick to it. Because that's where the money is, Ken. It's in the middle. You know that from real estate. It's not in the high-end market. It's not in the low-end market. All the money's in the middle. People have different opinions about vaccines. Some people say that it's a great way for it's a great way to eradicate horrible diseases that kill people and cause children disabilities and all this other stuff. Other people say it's government plot and they're injecting microchips into you and trying to control your thoughts. Ken, I don't know. I don't know what the real deal is. I'm not a doctor, Ken.
Well, a lot of people are describing the times we're in as unprecedented and having this kind of constant roiling turmoil. How do you see this?
Oh, man, you remember the 60s and the 70s, or at least you've read about it. This is nothing compared to that time. Boy, you want to talk about roiling. We had political assassinations. Come on now. This time is nothing. This is a walk in the park.
And now for something completely different. It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Our next offering from Ken Lane was released January 14th, 2022. Here is a hymn to Sekhmet, creator of the desert.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Time for invocations and prayer. Because when you get right with the right gods, the veil between the worlds dissolves, and you become the spirit's human host, for a little while anyway. An important amount of time. And it's important to be a good host. For example, if you went to the Temple of Sekhmet, somewhere on the Nile, well, you would be treated well. Thousands of people attended her festivals, with much drinking of beer and wine and a little bit of mushroom brew to broaden your mental horizons. And because Sekhmet is the goddess of intoxication, once you were resting comfortably on the porch of drunkenness, that's a real place on the water. The palm trees and river rushes swaying in the breeze. Well, that's when the musicians arrived. Especially the drummers, long lines of temple musicians waking up the revelers with a wild musical score. Sekhmet, goddess of war with the head of a lioness. Goddess of healing who spares her people from the plague, while sending it in heavy waves upon those she has damned. Mistress of dread, Sekhmet, whose hot breath created the desert itself. Sekhmet, who we call with the simple name Great One. And the priestesses would chant out her prayer as she became one with the priestesses, and one with the drummers, and one with the celebrants. I am she who cometh forth. I am yesterday, and I am the seer of millions of years. I am the power of the divine judge. I dwell in the east. I am the lady of eternity, the unveiled one. My name is created to defy all evil. I am the flame that shineth in the sanctuary. I am Sekhmet. How long has Sekhmet ruled over humanity? 5,000 years. That's when she is first known to us, appearing in something like her current form in Upper Egypt, 2930 BC, worshipped in her great temples until the coming of the Coptic Christians and then the followers of Allah when her cult went underground. But it never went away, and now it is her time. Again. These are the days of Sekhmet, when she destroys with the fire of the sun over the desert, when she drinks the Nile, when she covers the land with blood. There is a moment that keeps flashing back. From December, when I was back in New Orleans, it was steamy out in the weeks before Christmas. Strange summer weather. Before that monster cold front of monster tornadoes reached Memphis and beyond. And I was doing what I do when I've got a day off. Walking around, walking the old part of town, the first city in my memory where I was born and raised. Stepping into bookstores, stepping into bars, walking the quiet streets by Esplanade. Where at one point on a plague-silent French Quarter street of beautiful old homes, three men stepped out of a courtyard and into the heavy, humid atmosphere as daylight faded into dusk. They walked and stepped together, black suits, black overcoats, bowler hats, like riverboat card dealers or on-call morticians, tall men, silent like phantoms. I followed a half block behind them. Finally, on Charter Street, they vanished into a sea of film crew workers. I kept walking through a sprinkle of raindrops, hard to tell where the air stops and the water begins. Stopped to have a drink at Harry's Corner next to three retired ladies drinking bottled beer, laughing and gossiping about the neighborhood. Now it was twilight, and I can't figure out exactly where I was. Maybe along the back wall of the old convent. I wasn't at Jackson Square. The streets had not opened up like that. And there was a tarot card reader at a little table. I'd been thinking every time I saw a neon palm reader sign in another town, I should probably go see a fortune teller, a card reader, somebody with the second sight. She looked up at me, black hair and black eyeliner, like an Egyptian priestess, and held my eyes for what seemed like too long. Her expression deeply serious. But she was reading for somebody else, three tarot cards facing up from the tablecloth. A tourist sitting there in my chair. I walked on down the street thinking I should probably go back once the other reading was done, and then I got distracted. Where was I anyway? An hour later, walking through the garden district, looking at the Christmas lights, I realized I had not gone back to the card reader's spot, and I could not figure out where it was. In the morning, I was on the road again, driving through Mississippi, wondering if I had time to go to Tupelo. I've been back in the desert for nearly a month now, wondering what, if anything, would have happened had I not lost my way, lost my priorities. In that sliver of the French Quarter, where I've walked 1,000 times. One thing that's nice about coming to this part of the American desert is it's so green. I know people don't say that when they get here from Chicago, but when you're where I'm from, when you're from the Mojave, this looks tropical. I know there was a lot of monsoon rains, and a lot of people's previously gravel backyards turned into jungles, but it's still a shock just to drive in and be surrounded by green things, by Palo Verde trees, by cactus that you can see the green for miles. You know, it can get sad out around Joshua Tree. You start to project your need for some sort of life forms on just about anything. And sometimes we get people, weekenders out from L.A., and they'll get pretty excited over ragweed, you know? Oh, it's very precious how it survives in this harsh environment. And it's a metaphor. So, if you've read the magazine, Desert Oracle magazine, there was a piece that was written by a guy from Sholo named Godfrey Daniels. He goes by the Deuce of Clubs. And he wrote this piece about Picacho Peak and how the interstate was straightened. There was a bend that kind of went around the old town, and it erased the town pretty much. And so all the swinging places of the era, there was a steakhouse, there was a band that played in the cocktail lounge, dancing nightly. We used to have a lot more fun. But then the interstate had to be straightened, and so it was straightened, and all the nice old businesses disappeared, and supposedly there wasn't much left of it. And I hadn't been through there since reading the history of it, so I had a little extra time coming into town. I thought I'd go look. So I went and stopped at the state park. It's a beautiful state park, and the best part, I would think, for summer is that the peak shields the park from the sun after about, you know, 4 or 5 p.m. So it was all peaceful and serene, and there were some people hiking and camping. And I thought, let's go see the town, see what happened to it. The only thing I could find open was a sex shop. And this was perplexing because there didn't seem to be anybody there other than some people doing healthy things like hiking. It didn't seem like they'd be in the market for whatever a sex shop sells in 2021. But there it was, like a little fortress on a hill. A fortress of freedom, I suppose. And there were two cars there, and I was thinking, that's got to be awkward. Because one works there, and the other person, I guess, was the shopper. And that was you, you know, no judgment. And it's just a little odd in that cracked asphalt parking lot in a place that in times past supposedly was kind of swinging. Well, maybe it's swinging now. This is what happened. As I drove out on the little road there beside the interstate, I came across an enormous, luxurious RV park about a third of a mile south of the sex shop, which is called Lion's Den, in case you want to check it out. It kind of goes with the park, you know, mountain lion, etc. And then as I was going by the RV park and looking at all these beautiful RVs,
because, let's face it, baby boomers have a lot of money to spend on vehicles. And so they've got a lot of vehicles, and the vehicles they have are often very large and very comfortable. There are RVs with whole little setups outside, like a whole patio set from Lowe's, and people talking and walking their little dogs, and it just went on for miles. It was very clean. And there's a whole economy, as you know, people who come out here for the winter months, the snowbirds, and stay someplace nice and have kind of a vacation for life, and then they go back somewhere else and they have boats, I assume. Seaplanes. There's the sad other side of that coin, kind of the nomad land thing of the people living in RVs because that's where they've got to live. And working where they can, Amazon fulfillment warehouses. But this is kind of the nice one. Like the kind where they tow a new car behind the new RV. And just as I started to pass it, I remembered something very, I guess, disturbing. It's disturbing especially because I don't have any special knowledge of it or anything. I learned it off TikTok. You all know about this? Do you know about the pineapple thing?
No.
All right. Well, this is going to be some information that could save you from a uncomfortable social situation. Apparently, the people in these RV parks have pineapple knickknacks. And when they get to their spot, they set up the pineapple knickknacks. Now, these might be pineapple Christmas lights, pineapple ceramic little statues. It means they're swingers in the RV park. So then I'm thinking, I bet that Lion's Den shop gets real busy after 1 o'clock, you know? And maybe those RV parks are not kind of dismal places to wait out your last years. Maybe that's the only place people are having fun anymore. You pull up in your 48-foot motorhome. You get your good space. You set up the Starlink and the DirecTV and the patio furniture. And then you put out the pineapples. And it's like a worm on a hook, I guess, you know? And you never know who it's going to be. Could be the nicest old couple. Looking like they're passing out church leaflets or something. But then the pineapple Christmas lights come on. And there's no lockdown anymore. But if you're interested in desert flora and fauna, as many of us are out here, you might think, what if we did something a little more in tune with our environment, something that matched the bioregion, the ecoregion, localism, all that? Instead of putting a prickly old ceramic pineapple from Big Lots or whatever outside, you could put a little prickly pear cactus in a certain color pot. Maybe a pineapple color, gold and green, something like that. Or maybe it could be an animal. You could get a peccary. Because a peccary is kind of spiky and horny in a sense. But then everybody would have to know about these things. And it's one of the educational missions we try to do at Desert Oracle. You got about 10,000 people a day moving to Arizona, and everything's confusing. There are black widows everywhere. There's scorpions and centipedes and rattlesnakes, and you can't go outside for 6 or 7 months of the year. And if you could educate people about these things, you know, this is a peccary or a javelina, this is a bighorn sheep, this is a mountain lion, this is a sun spider, those are fun, then we'd have a language, sort of cultural language that we could use amongst ourselves. And we could use it for whatever reason. It doesn't have to be, you know, swinging in the RV. And then you wouldn't have situations like a video that was going around the last 2 weeks. And it was on Nextdoor. You all know what Nextdoor is? Nextdoor is like Facebook for people who want to stop people from walking on their street. Is basically Nextdoor. So this went out on Nextdoor in Tucson. And it's one of those door video cameras that everybody's got now, so that they can watch the footage after they've watched everything else. And then they can see like a bug going by and then post that somewhere. I saw a UFO hovering outside my house. It was uncanny. It just shot up and disappeared. Or spider webs. You see a lot of those. There's a spider web reflecting off the porch light in the morning dew. And they say, oh, the UFOs are shooting lasers at my house in Saguaro Ranch Phase 3. A Dell Web company. It'd be nice to have a little more background information about such things. That way, when you actually saw something weird, you'd know. If it's a blimp, you'd know. If it's a bug, you'd know. And then if it was something truly weird, something that made no sense, something that did not look like anything that exists, the film director, Guillermo del Toro, saw a UFO in the desert of Mexico. He and a buddy of his. And he was asked about it, and he said, it just kind of disgusted me because it was so poorly designed. It looked like bad CGI. It looked like a cliche. And this is something true in the reports. It's something true when I saw my one close-up weird UFO. It looked fake. It looked like a layer that somebody put over the reality we live in. So once this gets out on the radio, there's a chance that certain people are going to start using peccaries and prickly pear as a sign that you're welcome to come in with your partner, and you all go to the Lion's Den sex shop together. And it's really a way of building community.
Amboy to Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio broadcasting from Joshua Tree. Last week I mentioned the Spanish language edition of Desert Oracle Volume 1 from Melusina Editions in Madrid. And this week I got some copies in the mail from my U.S. publisher. I feel like there was supposed to be a check in there too. So I was flipping through the translated edition and I got to the end where the Spanish publisher has placed its logo, which is an ancient woodcut of Melusina, Melusine, in this form as mermaid twins sharing one tail. And I remembered that Melusina, Lady of the Rivers, the Fairy Queen, the shape-shifting mermaid sorceress, etc., is supposedly, I don't know, my 20th great-grandmother. If you can believe the story of Elizabeth Woodville, my 16th great-grandmother, I think. Then it turns out historians do not believe that this is the fact of the matter. But what do they know about mermaids anyway? The air is thick with spirits and men do not see them. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the soundscapes tonight, including the one from our live show in Tucson at Club Congress. And thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to say your prayers to Sekhmet. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
You might want to do a little research on Melusina. It's a pretty interesting tale that is told in many cultures. Our background audio today has been the chickadees around the cabin, maybe a few jets. And thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to my fellow volunteers and the supporters and underwriters of KGVM, and to you. How are you doing in this new year? I haven't mentioned it in a while, but I'd like to hear from you, so leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-424-6246. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Keep the snow thoughts going, watch the skies, keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay well, and I'll see you next week.